You're listening to Building the Game with Rob and Jason.
It's Building the Game with Jason and Rob. For tabletop game design, you really can't go wrong. Building the game, yeah, building the game.
Hello and welcome to Building the Game, a documentary podcast. Today is Monday. What is the date? It's the 13th. Yeah, Monday, June 13th, 2016. You're listening to episode 211. And we've got a little bit of a strange setup happening here. I am recording into a regular microphone. Jason is not with me.
No, I am not.
No, he is not. Because Jason has leprosy?
Something like that. I was lucky enough on vacation to contract hand, foot, and mouth, which is not foot, hoof, and mouth. That is a cow disease.
Totally different.
Got hand, foot, and mouth from my daughter. Yeah, and adults don't normally get it, but I guess that there was a thing going on at her daycare, and a bunch of people got it, including a bunch of adults. So, yay for that.
A particularly virulent strain, apparently.
I guess. So it it is not great, but yeah, so I'm back at work, but avoiding you, because you are terrified that I'm going to make you sick, which you do have the, I would say that you probably have the immune system of a small child, so I think that's fair.
I would say I probably have a stronger immune system than you, if only because you have two kids that are, seem to be constantly sick, and so your immune system is constantly trying to catch up.
That is true. So, yeah. Hence this case. I honestly think the only reason I got it is because we were camping, so we were all together, and you're camping, you're not hand washing as much as you should, you know.
Sure.
So yeah, I really think that's probably what happened.
Yeah,
but it is what it is. So yeah, so I'm technically not contagious, but look super like I have leprosy. I have spots all over my hands and feet and mouth, and it's great times. So
yeah, it's gross. Yeah. And I don't want you anywhere near me.
That's fair. Honestly, if we were recording at your house, I wouldn't be worried about it, but you coming here concerns me anyways, because it's kind of ground zero. So,
yeah,
you know, we're going to lice all the whole house down.
Good.
That's what they say to do. And yeah.
Yeah. Just in time also for me to sit in a car with you as we drive to Origins this coming weekend.
Yeah. But I mean, that's technically 2 weeks away. So,
well,
I think by then we'll be okay.
I hope so. I hope so.
I'd be curious. I very well may. They said the spots on adults can last for weeks. So
yeah.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
Makes me feel real good.
Yeah. Because you're going to be pitching to publishers and they're going to be looking at your hands while you're holding cards and stuff, right?
Right.
Yeah. So right. I'm sorry about that.
Not to mention that there's a pretty good chance my thumbnail is just going to come right off. So that's exciting.
That is horrible. I'm sorry.
Because yeah, luckily it's my left hand, but still. One of the red spots showed up, and it's huge underneath my thumbnail. And the doctor's like, yeah, that might just fall off. I was like, oh, that's awesome, dude. Thanks. And it would happen like a month later. So, yay,
oh,
that's great.
Yeah. Good. So it's going to be like that scene. Yeah, like that scene in The Fly when Jeff Goldblum's just peeling his fingernails off.
Kind of like that. Yeah. It's going to be almost exactly like that.
One of the most horrifying scenes in movie history.
Right. Hey, speaking of Jeff Goldblum.
Yeah.
Did you hear he's going to be in the new Thor movie?
No.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, he's going to play the villain. So
he's the villain?
I think one of the villains. Maybe I'm confused, but I think he's one of the villains.
That's so, yeah. Great.
And the other villain is Cate Blanchett, I think.
Really?
She's going to be, I think.
Okay.
So, yeah, I think. This is all hearsay at this point, but man, I mean, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, like Cate Blanchett, like, you know, Lord of the Rings kind of thing. I can see her being scary and bad, but Jeff Goldblum, man.
Right.
I don't even know. Yeah.
I think it's safe to say who I've heard he's going to be, because so if you don't want to know, don't listen, but I assume you don't care, because you're not big into the comics.
You know what? Don't tell me. It's better if we don't say anything while we're recording.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So, well, the Cate Blanchett thing has been out there for a while, so I don't feel bad about that.
Okay.
Right. If you want to bleep me, though, you're more than welcome to bleep me.
Well, we'll see. I might.
I would hope no grudges against that. Speaking of which, pop culture-wise, Game of Thrones has been fantastic.
Yeah, it has. Holy cow.
Did you watch the last week's episode?
Yeah, right. And man. Gosh, we can't talk about it.
I know, but the things that happened, Well, the guest star of the week, we can say there was a guest star.
Yeah.
He is amazing. It's somebody we love. And
yeah.
He owned his, you know, hour of time, screen, his 15 minutes of screen time, literally. But
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it was good. It was good. Very well done.
Oh, man, and I wish we could say more.
I know.
I wish that you weren't sick so that we could talk about this outside of this.
Because I really actually want to talk about Silicon Valley, too. So.
Yeah, that latest episode I have not watched yet.
Oh, you've got it. So good.
I'm probably going to do that later tonight once we're done.
So good.
Yeah.
So they do something in the episode. I bet I'm the only person in the world that noticed it. But it's so subtle. And after you watch it, I'll mention it. Because mm-hmm. I know that they did that on purpose, what they did. It's not like I was like, oh, haha, I saw that, and I made that up in my head. Like, it's real. They did it on purpose, and it's so subtle, and I just love that kind of stuff. And, like, this little nods to other things without really saying it. Mm-hmm. I love it. Love it. Yeah. Good times.
Good. So did you play any games while you were on vacation?
Not really.
No?
Because we were going to, and then I got sick. And then no one wanted to play games with me because that's fair. So
yeah, no, can't argue with that. Well, I had a big thing happen yesterday.
Yeah, you did. What was that?
Yeah, Saloon Tycoon finished. It showed up in the mail, because AJ and Evan got the first production copy from the printer. They got that last week, as of this recording anyway. And one of the first things AJ did is sent me some pictures and then said, hey, do you want to take this with you to Origins? I can send it priority mail to you.
And you were like, I guess so, gee.
Yeah. So they recorded the Kickstarter video, the Kickstarter update, unboxing of that, and then they shipped it straight to me, and it came in the mail yesterday, and it is beautiful. It is beautiful.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it looks so good. So it's the complete retail game plus all of the expansions that were unlocked as Kickstarter bonuses, with the exception of the gold.
Okay, not there yet.
Yeah, did not have the Fool's Gold, nor did it have the regular gold pieces that are shipping with the game.
Oh, okay.
Because
they weren't ready yet.
Yeah, they weren't ready yet. They shipped separately, and JJ didn't want to wait to try and get those and worry about getting it to me, mailing it to me too late. So he went ahead and shipped the base game. So builders, if you backed the game, or if you're just curious and giving it a shot, you can find me at Origins. And what you see is what you will get when you buy the game, with the exception of the gold. I'm just going to bring yellow cubes with me. But know that the final the final gold pieces will be plastic jewel things that are kind of a metallic gold color, and Kickstarter backers who went for the deluxe level with the actual Fool's Gold nuggets. I still haven't seen those, but I am excited about it, as I'm sure you can guess.
Yeah, it's super exciting. I can't wait to see more about it.
Yeah, it looks super good.
The picture you sent me looked really good, and that was just of the box art. So
yeah. So. Really excited about that. Everything looks great, and I think everybody probably saw in his update that he expects final assembly, a component assembly, to be done in the next week or so, and for it to get on a boat and be on its way. So it should be shipping to backers before Gen Con, assuming the container doesn't fall off a boat or something, you know. But
well, if that happens, I mean, no one can be blamed for that. Like, it's not anyone of Van Ryder Games.
Right. But yeah, that's super exciting. So big stuff. I'm going to have that with me at Origins. I don't know if I can say this or not, but I'm going to go ahead and say it. The plan right now is that Playco is going to launch the Kickstarter campaign for Epic Monster Tea Party the weekend of Origins.
Sweet.
Yeah, so at some point that weekend, they're going to have a table, they're going to have a booth at Origins. At some time during that weekend when we're there, I'm going to be with Will. Will is the guy in charge of Playco. Will and I are going to shoot some kind of a short video to talk about it, I don't know if that's going to be a part of the initial intro video or if it'll be an update to the campaign. I don't know exactly what his plan is for that, but Epic Monster Tea Party, I hope he will have an example of the game for demos. I don't know that for sure, but that's really exciting too. So,
cool.
Big haps. Yeah. I guess I should also say, so I decided on Treasure Trouble instead of Dungeon Ruckus.
Excellent.
Yeah, Treasure Trouble. That's just it. It's just simpler, and it's...
It flows.
Yeah. So I decided on that, and I got all the card art done for all the card faces, but I wanted to have a few copies of it with me for Origins, and I ran out of time to really spend the time that I wanted to for packaging and for making nice-looking card backs. So I just kind of threw something together for card backs, and but I ordered a few copies from GameCrafter of that, so I should have that with me there to test as well. To get more feedback on, and you know, who knows, maybe a publisher will be interested. But just to set that expectation of builders, the faces of the cards I'm pretty happy with, but the card backs are just actually pretty terrible. Just good enough for now.
Well, I mean, you made good copies though, that's pretty awesome. So
yeah.
Yeah, I need to get together. I'm not gonna make a fancy copy of Ramblers, but I am going to go ahead and make a make just a nicer copy.
Yeah.
You know, make sure I have all the right components, and I need to do some practicing pitching on that because it's been a while. So
yeah,
there's that.
Yeah, and I'm gonna spiff up Scrappers, so I'll have that with me to test as well. But I think that's really all I'm bringing. So well, that's all I'm bringing. I'm bringing Saloon Tycoon. I'm bringing Galactus Scrappers, and I'm bringing Treasure Trouble. So those will be my big ones. I imagine I'll probably spend a lot of time playing Tycoon.
Yeah, I bet so.
Hopefully there'll be a lot of backers that are hanging out and interested in taking a look at it.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
So, what else are you bringing?
I'm going to have Minecart Madness and Ramblers with me. Plus I'll have my games from the competition. Just for the heck of it.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's gonna be my primary focus. I've got one meeting for Ramblers, which I'm probably gonna show the Minecart Madness as well, and then I have another meeting to show somebody Ramblers and Minecart, just kind of as a hey, let's look at this together and see what you think, and see if you got any feedback and any thoughts if this is something you'd want to do. So that's cool. Yeah.
Great.
And, yeah, so that's my big plan. Oh, and then the other big thing is what I will have is I should have promo cards with information about the Kickstarter and the name of my game that that is being published by the Grand Gaming Academy, which is Mark's publishing company. So,
yeah.
And the artwork continues to look amazing.
Yeah, so, you showed me some more. You showed me a logo design the other day, which...
And it's really good.
Oh, it's so good.
So I will hopefully have some of those to pass out. That is the current plan.
Sweet.
By the time this posts, we'll probably know for sure.
Right.
So, I'm pretty excited about it to be able to show people finally and say, look, check it out. This is what this does, you know? And, it's exciting stuff. So
cool.
And Mark, you know, I just want to say Mark has been fantastic to work with. He's just been amazing to work with. So that is awesome. So, yeah.
Cool. Great. Well, I think maybe it's time for a topic, huh?
Yeah, let's talk about a topic.
Okay. We had a Twitter suggestion.
We did, and it was a darn good one, too.
Yeah.
So that was demoing games to publishers. So demoing your designs to a publisher. Was that what they meant by that? Or did I misunderstand it?
That was my understanding as well. Do you want to look back at the tweet?
Demoing game designs. So, yeah.
And... Yeah. If we can still check the tweet so that we can give credit to the gentleman who...
Yes,
or woman who...
Great idea.
Yeah.
I'm pulling that up right now.
The individual.
The thing about recording the way we are is I can actually pull things up, like, no problem on the Twitter and stuff. So, okay. The tweet is from Chris Anderson, who is Blue Cube BGs. Blue Cube BGS, or I'm assuming that means board games. How about demoing a game design? Now, he may mean demoing it to other players. We've talked about that a lot. So let's talk a little bit about publishers, because I feel like that is right on task with what's going to happen in the next week.
Yeah. For us.
So I think it's a great topic. It's very timely. So thank you for that, Chris. And Chris gets to know that we're already going to talk about it because we responded to him and said, this is great. We're going to talk about this. So this is no surprise to Chris. All right. So there's a lot of advice you can give on demoing. This is something that we've done a bit of. We haven't done a ton of demoing, but I do think we've got some good things we can talk about with that. Some good thoughts that from our positive and negative experience, we certainly have both. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think you actually have more experience with this than I do, actually, because you've been more outgoing than I have been with contacting publishers and scheduling meetings. I've only done it a couple of times in that sort of a structure. With Tycoon and Tea Party, I made connections with publishers just kind of by chatting and by hanging out and having, obviously my experience at Unpub from 2015, where people were playing the game and they just kind of stopped by and said, hey, this looks cool, tell me about it, you know?
Yeah. First of all, that is ideal.
Yeah.
That is what you want.
Right.
Because then you have a publisher who is interested because I saw it and they were like, this looks cool, so I would like to, I would like to take a look at it. That takes out a lot of the, we're not talking about what it takes to get the meeting, because that is still really hard. That's the hardest thing you'll do, I think, in game design, in my personal opinion. And yeah. I'm more outgoing than Rob, and I still feel that way. I hate cold calling people. I hate sending emails. Not even because I hate rejection. I hate non-response, and you get that. And that's really frustrating, right?
Yeah.
So my tips for pitching. First and foremost, be prepared. I've heard from myself and numerous other game designers, when you're not prepared, if you ask for a formal pitch, be prepared. If a publisher does what they did with Rob and stops by your table and says, what's going on, you're a little less prepared then, you're a little caught off guard, hey, that's okay, because you weren't asking to pitch to them, right? But if you're going to say, hey, I want your time, sit down with me, let's talk about this, be prepared. I know I've had circumstances where I was not nearly as prepared as I thought I was. I think my favorite one was Beat on the Street. That was one of those, like, where I thought I was going to be prepared and I wasn't, right? And I think you remember this scenario, Rob.
I do.
I called the publisher and said, hey, would you mind if I show this to you at Gen Con? Publisher said, oh, I'd love to see it. That sounds good, I said, hey, I don't know if it's up your alley, but and the publisher said, I've heard only good things about it. I want to see it. Great. So I made some changes. I felt like I was happy with them, with some real close internal playtesting with only a couple people. We did a few tests. They all worked out great. I felt good. And then I said, but I need to show it to a big group of people who've never played it, or mostly never played it. So I sat down with that big group of people, and just as we sat down and they started to play it, and these were not ideal playtesters, right? I purposely was picking people who would be out of their comfort zone and not be sure about it, right?
Yep.
And probably have negative opinions. That was my hope. And the publisher walks up while we start playing and says, oh, can I just watch this? And wow, did that suck. So
yeah,
that ended up with me saying some apologies about, man, I felt like this was farther along. Clearly these people don't like it. I didn't want to say, hey, I was hoping to get some more playtests in before I showed you, since I already said I wanted to pitch to you, because I could see why that would annoy a publisher. But the publisher was super great about it and super nice, and I really appreciated that. But I had some egg on my face there, and I felt unprepared, and that sucked. So that's my first point of advice, would be prepared.
Mm-hmm.
You got a piece of advice you want to throw out? And then I've got some other stuff, too.
Yeah, the next thing I would say is know your game.
Yes.
Know your game means know what makes it shine, what makes it stand out, and makes it different, and know the areas that might not be the strongest, or might if not strong, because if you're pitching it to a publisher, hopefully it's already a strong game and you're comfortable with it, but know the areas where that people have questioned, where people have been unsure. So know what those areas are and make sure that you have good responses to those answers, to those obvious questions or obvious areas of communication or confusion or just opportunities for where people don't get it right away, know what those things are early on, because those are going to be the first thing. If it's the first thing that pops into a playtester's head, there's a good chance it's going to be the first thing that it pops into a publisher's head. So
it probably will be, because publishers, hey, guess what? Super smart and really good playtesters, by the way.
Yeah, right. So know that stuff. I guess that's part of be prepared, but so know your games is
right. That's good. You know, yeah. I think that you want to, even if possible, be preemptive about the stuff you're a little concerned about.
Yeah.
So that you can basically say, oh, and sometimes this happens, or, you know, I mean, there is a way to positively spin those things. It's like in an interview when they say, what is a weakness you have? And you, like, try to give them a weakness that could also be a strength.
Yeah.
Right? It's the same thing. Like, that's what you're trying to do.
Right.
So being preemptive about that, but as to Rob's point of know what makes it shine, lead with that. Whatever the most unique, awesome thing about your game is, lead with that.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you lead with the just, oh, it's this kind of, you know, you want to have a hook, right? You want, when you sit down, you want to have a hook. Now, maybe you already had the hook to get them there, right? Doesn't hurt to rehash that hook real quickly. Because, again, that is what made them come see you.
Sure.
Or that's probably what made them sit down. You know, for instance, Saloon Tycoon, what's the hook?
The hook is stacking cubes and tiles.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I was going to say, but I was like, I'll just let Rob say it because Rob's going to say the same thing.
Yeah.
And that's the hook, right? So that is...
Yeah.
The cool thing about that is, so when you sit down with someone, you immediately start setting it out and start stacking stuff up, right?
Yeah.
Because then the people are like, oh my gosh, yes!
Right, and luckily that's a really obvious and really strong hook. That's really what got the game noticed. What sold it to publisher. It's what got it so much attention on Kickstarter, frankly.
Right.
Because it's so a good hook.
Something might be a little harder would be Gunslinger Ramblers, right? Like we'll try you, and we maybe will disagree on this, but you've played it enough times. What do you think the hook is about that game?
For me, the hook is the theme and the silly poker.
Okay, cool. So when I pitch it to a publisher, I actually diminish the poker because that can be a concern for them.
It's a good point.
It's silly because every playtester has liked the poker aspect. So I usually focus on the silly theme and the rotation of the Ramblers, right?
Uh-huh.
So the idea of, hey, you know, in most games, you play a character, you're that character. In this game, you're there to let your character die so you can make more money, right? Like, your character's going to get shot or pass out or run out, you know, or have other bad things happen to them. That's what's cool about this game, right? You know, so yeah. So that's what I shoot for. But the poker thing, I always have to, like, I used to not talk about the poker thing, and then they'd say, oh, well, what poker? What if they don't know how to play poker? So, like, now one of the things I lead with after saying the first thing is, and there's a little poker aspect to the way the game played. It's super fun. It's so simple. And you do never have to have played poker to understand it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I always talk about, we have playtesters within three turns, they're playing poker on their own because it's not really poker. It's simulated poker.
Yeah, it's true. You're not actually playing poker. You're just...
Right. But you did say, in your defense, you said silly poker.
Yeah.
And that's what it is, right?
Yeah.
It's poker where it's pretty broken on purpose to encourage people to shoot each other in the face. The whole goal of that game is to have more gunfights. It really is.
Yeah. The poker...
Gunfights are fun.
Right. Poker is a theme placed upon, basically, who has the highest number.
Right.
Yeah.
And does that actually matter? Because a lot of times, it's who has the second highest number, and do they feel like fighting?
That's true. Right. Right.
So that's what I think stands out about the game, is that gets people's attention, because they're like, oh, wow, yeah, that's different, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, so hooks are good. So that was you. I've got one I could say.
Sure.
And this, I think you'll have some things to say about this too, is it's hard to be a person who is good at reading other people's visual cues. So this may be something you're not good at. It is something you should practice. It will help you in life in general. If you work in a business and being good at this, you will go far. It is very important. Being able to read other people's mannerisms, understand what they're liking, they're not liking, so that when you're talking about something, you see them go, you know, make a little face, you know, okay, I have to be attentive to this, and I have to fix this, right? So those are for the things that come up that you didn't plan for, right? Like, you're like, I know my hook, I know the weak points, but then something else is a weak point to them. You and I, Rob, have both had this happen in pitches where suddenly the weak point is like, whoa, 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 wait, I thought that was strong. Like, what?
Yeah.
So I think being able to roll with those punches, recognize when someone doesn't like something, and you shouldn't change. You shouldn't suddenly be like, oh, no, no, that's not how it works. It works this way. Don't lie. But what you can do is you can attempt to pivot a little bit and say, no, this is why this works. This is why this is cool. That is a great, or even to say, some people are concerned about this because of X, Y, and Z, but here's why it's awesome, right? And that confidence, I think, in a non-cocky way can sometimes help the perception of the publisher, because they're thinking, Rob already thought of this. Rob's not worried about this because Rob already thought of this. And if Rob's been playtesting and he thought of this, maybe Rob's right. So I'm going to keep it in my mind, but I feel better about it. So that's my thought for that. There's more I could go into with that, but I think that's one of the easy, biggest things to pay attention for.
Sure. Yeah, next thing that comes to my mind is be succinct. All this stuff really ties together, of course, but be able to communicate things clearly and quickly, be able to explain how the game plays clearly and quickly, and you can have a complex game with a lot of components and a lot of details, and for a pitch, you don't need to read the entire rule book to them and describe.
Please do not.
Yeah, every possible card combination and every contingency plan you've come up with to deal with potential conflicts of stuff, and you don't have to get into that. You need to be able to explain what's fun and the basics of what it's going to feel like to play that game, and the basics of how you're going to do that.
Yep.
And you need to be able to do that in a small, short package so that you can hook them.
Right. And a really good test of this is something that our buddy Joe Hopkins came up with without even telling us, and I love him for this. At Unpub, Joe Hopkins would come up and say, hey, explain your game to me. And you'd explain it, and he'd time you, but he didn't tell you he was timing.
Yeah.
And when you were done, he'd say, that took you 3 minutes, that's really good. Or that took you 10 minutes, that's too long. I was fortunate to have Minecart Madness, so I can explain that game in 60 to 90 seconds very succinctly and have people understand it.
Yeah.
And I went there, it took me 2 minutes to give him a really good explanation, and he's like, whoa, that was right about 2 minutes. That's fantastic, you know? So the problem is, if you know you're shooting for the time, it kind of forces it, right? So that's what I love about him, is that he didn't tell us. He just timed us. And then afterwards gave feedback. And I thought that was really good.
Yeah.
So do that to your friends.
Yeah. He's a smart guy.
He is a very smart guy.
Yeah.
He has some really cool games. So I like him a lot.
Yeah.
He's been invaluable to giving us feedback on some stuff, too.
Yeah, absolutely. This might be the hardest thing for a lot of people. But self-confidence.
Oh, yeah.
You know, be self-confidence, just if you show people that you're comfortable with you and with your presentation of you, that also means you're confident with the presentation of the thing that you're presenting.
Yep.
I mean, that goes so far. It helps the publisher be confident when you're confident.
Yeah. Like, when you say things like, yeah, and then you do this, and then you do that. Like, I guess the simple solution to that, to make that a little easier, is start by being passionate. Be passionate about your game and believe that your game is awesome.
Yeah.
Because, honestly, for most designers, I would say your game is better than you think it is.
Mm-hmm.
Like, especially in the beginning, like, when you... Like, Rob, this happens with you all the time. Like, your games are constantly better than you think they are. Now, the good news is, when you pitch to a publisher, you don't act like that. But I know you personally to know that so many times your games are better than you think they are. And, you know, we all fall into this trap. And that's okay, right? It's just something to think about.
Yeah. And that's hard, though. I mean, you and I don't struggle with anxiety the way some people do. You know,
right.
And we're lucky for that, because I think we are rare in not having those self-confidence problems the way a lot of people in this world do. you know, and I'm not a good person to give advice on how to overcome that stuff because it's really not a big problem for me, and I acknowledge that I'm lucky with that.
Well, that's why I think to say be passionate and focus on your passion for your game.
Yeah.
And if you are passionate about your game, it will come through as confidence, even if it's not.
Yeah.
So I really do think that that can help a lot.
Yeah.
But it's not easy, you know, I mean... Rob and I are both people who can be pretty self-deprecating as necessary, so we're not afraid to be embarrassed or embarrass ourselves. Mm-hmm. I mean, we do this podcast, right? And that has helped tremendously. I would say from 4 years ago, we were probably less like this than we are now.
Yeah.
Because putting everything out there and not being able to take it back afterwards,
Sure.
That makes you a little less concerned about that overall.
But we're also not the kind of people who are afraid to speak up in a room full of people and disagree with everyone in that room, you know?
Yes, absolutely. So, in fact, you and I at work continually do that. And
yeah.
That's why people actually think we're valuable, because we're not afraid to do that. So.
Yeah, so.
But I understand that's hard for people, but I mean, we've seen games before where in the end, it's felt like, the worst thing about this game is the person should be more confident because this game is great.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But yeah, so it's hard. So just practice. Pitch to your friends. If you are a game designer who knows a game designer who's pitching, you know, like a game to you, and like you think the game is good and they seem unconfident about it, talk them up about how good it is. Let them know how good it is, because that hopefully will help their confidence. And it's true, right? You're saying this is a good game. You need to be passionate about this and go for it. Yeah, that's important, right?
Yep.
And I think we need to do that for each other. I know you and I do that for each other a lot.
Yep.
One of us is like, I feel unsure about this. And it's like, why don't you like it? Well, because of this. Well, what about this, this, and this? Hey, you know, or sometimes it's, no, I'm just going to move on, right?
So yeah, right.
For you and I, because we constantly are checking out new ideas and stuff. But for some people, they'll spend a good, you know, year on one game focusing. Now, granted, I'm dealing with two games that I've been working on for more than a year, but I mean, that's okay, because that's not my norm. I've also worked on several other games during that time, one of which that's getting published, so, you know, so it works both ways, right.
Gosh,
anything else you want to throw out there for that?
I don't think so. There's little things, you know, like wear clean clothes, you know, trim your fingernails, make sure your fingernails and your hands are clean, because you're going to be holding cards and pointing to things with your hands.
Try not to have red blisters all over your hands.
Yeah, you know, I mean, there are things like that, you know, guys shave or trim your beard or whatever, you know.
Before we go to a convention, I almost always trim my beard and get a haircut.
Yeah.
And I've actually, and you have noticed to do this too, like I usually now will wear button-down shirts and stuff.
Yep.
Just to look, because I noticed that a lot of designers don't do that. So I'm like, hey, I'll look a little more professional, you know?
Maybe yeah.
Not a lot more professional, but a little. And maybe that'll make them take me seriously. That
yeah.
works at work. So maybe right. it'll work there too, you know?
You're selling, so the publishers are running a business. And
right.
and they want to be professional, and they want to know that they're going to get into business or do business with someone else who is professional. And
right.
and we are dabbling in a pretty casual industry, all things considered, but it's still an industry, it's still a business. And I think there's a lot to be said for presenting yourself professionally when you're talking about business. I think that's important, and I care about that. And it's in a lot of ways, it's a subconscious, it's a subtle thing, but I think it's something that people need to pay attention to.
Well, and something subconsciously too that it does for me is if I go in with like a button-down shirt, feeling like a little more dressy than with a t-shirt,
yeah,
I feel more professional, and guess what? I feel more confident.
Yeah.
So that actually helps me personally,
right?
Because I used to always wear t-shirts, and now most of them at conventions I don't, because I feel more confident when I'm not.
Yep.
Which sounds maybe kind of dumb, but it works for me. So you know, back to the confidence thing, find those things for you that make you feel more confident and do those things.
Yep.
Even if you think it's silly, because, hey, why not, you know? Mm-hmm.
I know that when I know I look good, I feel better about myself. And
absolutely.
I have, yeah.
Absolutely. So, for instance, today, my first day back from work being sick, and I was like, oh, I could wear my comfortable shoes because those would be better on my feet. I can wear this clothes because, you know, it'll be... But we're in a training session all day. So, you know what I did? I suffered through it and wore nice clothes because I didn't look sickly then.
Yeah.
I felt better about myself.
Yeah. But I did notice...
Like, my feet super hurt because of it.
Yeah. So. And I noticed you sat in the far back of the room, too.
Because I'm also... And I told people, too. Like, I'm not going to touch stuff. I am not contagious, but I also don't want to take chances. And honestly, if we hadn't had the training, I would have just stayed home.
Sure.
You know, but what the doctor said, I'd have waited 2 more days and then went back and felt okay about it. But, you know, so just trying to be respectful of others, that's me, you know.
Yeah.
I'm just so polite and respectful.
You
so
are.
One of those things was true. The other one wasn't. I'm not always polite. So.
Yeah, so I guess that's the last thought that I have, is just just present yourself professionally. That goes a long way, and it's something that I think a lot of designers don't think about. They get so focused on the game that they forget to think about, you know, you're not just selling the game, you're selling yourself, because the publisher is going to have to continue working with you for as long as it takes to get that game to market. And if hopefully that game is a success, like they all want every game to be a success, they're going to have to continue working with you for as long as that game has a shelf life.
Right. And remember this, too, especially smaller publishers. Bigger publishers, I would say this is less of a concern, but I'm not a bigger publisher, so I could be wrong. And by bigger, I mean like the Mayfairs and stuff, or the people that are really publishing a lot of games. Like, you know, Mayfair is probably a really good example. Maybe like Asmodee and that sort of thing. But the smaller mid-range publishers, they are just as much, 50-50, if not more, publishing you, not just your game.
Yeah.
And that is really important. I've heard that from so many publishers, and it's true, right? And I've had doors open because I'm nice to people, and I get along with people, and I respect people, you know? I mean, for instance, working with Mark on this, if I hadn't been nice, like a nice, respectful person dealing with Mark over the years, as we've dealt with Grand Con, chances are, I would not have been a phone call he made to say, hey man, I'm interested in publishing some games. Could we talk? I know you've got some stuff that sounds interesting. Could we talk? If I was a jerk, that wouldn't have happened.
Yep.
Right? So,
right.
I mean, and I know for this to win it, because Mark is very big on relationships and working with people who he likes working with, because, right? Because that's what he likes to do, and why would you not want to do that?
Yep.
You know, so that's, obviously not every publisher's like that, but I mean, several that I know, they want to work with people that are cool to work with. Because, like you said, they're going to be working with you for a while, and that's important. So, you know, yeah. So focus on that, too, you know.
Yep. That's probably enough.
Yeah. So, yeah. So, you want to, you got your game to pitch now?
I do, yeah.
So this is your pitch, makeup pitch from last time when we did this sweet challenge.
Right.
It was pretty funny, actually.
That kind of fell apart and crashed and burned.
That's funny, too.
Yeah. Yeah, so you and I have not talked about this at all.
No, literally nothing.
Nothing at all. You don't have any idea what I'm about to pitch here. First thing I'll say is I don't have a name for it. Surprise. I don't know what to call it, so I'm going to call it gas mining.
Okay.
Okay. The thematic concept here is that think of Cloud City from Empire Strikes Back. Okay.
Okay.
The players are gas miners, and they're flying around, or they have their little kind of base station that's floating in the atmosphere of a gas giant planet. And I think this might be, you know, there's a lot of different kind of thematic hooks here. It could be steampunky, it could be sci-fi, it could be fantasy. I don't know. It's some kind of fantastical setting anyway. And you're kind of all based around this airship refinery, this gas refinery.
Okay.
Okay. And we are each running our own crew of gas miners, and we all are out on our own, and we have to go back to the refinery to process the gases that we collect from the clouds that are just kind of swirling around this planet. So this is a worker placement game.
Okay.
On the refinery, there are three stations on this refinery, and this is kind of the center of the table. There's the refinery board, or what we'll call it, the station board. Okay.
Okay.
And there are three locations. One of them is the refinery, and as you're collecting the raw gases, the resources, five different resource types. As you're collecting these gases, you're going to have to take them back. You're going to have to send your workers to the refinery to convert those simple, basic elemental gases into complex molecules. And that's what you're going to use for scoring or whatever, you know.
Cool.
The next location on the station is the black market. You can go to the black market. You can send your workers there, your miners there, to trade the raw elemental gas resources for cards. And cards are going to allow you to do things during the game. The last thing is the laboratory. The laboratory is where you combine the basic gases into complex molecules. The refinery allows you to convert one raw gas type into another gas type. So, of the five different resource types, you can get all of them from just generally mining the clouds, or you can go to the refinery to convert one into another. So you might be able to get more of the rare types by burning up some of the basic types. Does that work?
I think that makes sense, yeah.
Okay. So, I have some names for these gases. I tried to make them sound legit, but be ridiculous. So I've got grillium, borgonate, mamandaride, phalloflorophyte, and tripentigen. Those sounded like fun names.
Those sound like real fake gases.
I know, right? But I wanted to make sure I stayed away from the noble gases, you know, like, what is that? That's like helium and neon and that stuff.
Yes.
Yeah, I think Xenon's one of them. Yeah, I decided to stay away from those because TC Petty has Xenon Profiteer. I don't want to deal with any. I don't want to get in the way of any of his mojo there, you know. So I'm going for pure fantasy elements. So there are those three stations. There's three worker placement stations on the main station: the refinery, the black market, and the laboratory. But then there's also a track of cloud cards. These are the clouds that are kind of moving through your range, the area around the station where you can actually work, and you're gonna be placing your workers onto those cards as they pass by. So there's gonna be basically a track of five cards. This is a 2-4 player game. There's a track of five cards, and then start of every turn, all the cards slide down the track. These are the clouds that are just breezing past. And whatever card falls off the end of the track is gone. It moves on. It's out of range, and then a new one comes out. Right.
Okay.
So every turn, it sweeps around. Each card that's out there has a number. Maybe one slot, maybe two slots, maybe four slots, but it has places where you can place your workers. And the only way you can gather resources from those cards is by placing a worker on there. But those cards, again, they're transient, right? They're not going to be there forever. So you don't know what's going to come up until it goes face up. And it might pop up on a turn, on someone else's turn. And so you might not have five turns to collect stuff from it. You might only have one turn. So the opportunities for obtaining certain resources are transient. You're not always going to be able to be guaranteed to get the thing you need. That's why we have the refinery, so you can convert one thing into something else, hopefully. But there'd be potentially greater cost for that. Now, another thing, but they're not all the cloud cards are actual clouds of gases, you know? Some of those things could be other ships that are just kind of passing through, you know? One might be a ship where you can send somebody out there and you can hire mercenaries to attack somebody else, or you can maybe even recruit more miners into your business so you can get some more workers. There might be some kind of a market, some kind of general market where you can actually buy cards for cheaper than going to the black market or something like that. So there could be a lot of different things that are just kind of floating around the planet. There might even be weird cloud monsters or alien creatures that pass by.
I like cloud monsters. I vote for that.
Yeah. So I haven't worked out all the details of that stuff yet, of course, but those are some ideas I have for that. So some of the resources, as long as your guy is sitting on that card, or I should say on some of the cloud cards, as long as your guy is sitting on that card, he's going to collect one resource cube every time he's on there. And that doesn't just mean on your turn. That means every time a new card comes out and everything shifts down, he's going to collect another cube.
Okay.
Okay. Some of the cards that you play from your hand, you might be able to use those to kind of wrangle a card and pull it out of the track and hold it for a few turns so you can keep getting more stuff. There might also be certain vehicles or ships or even those monsters where you place a worker on there and maybe he doesn't get anything for the first turn and maybe he doesn't get anything for the second turn, but if you leave him there for three turns in a row, he's going to get, instead of only getting three resources for sitting there for three turns, he's going to get six resources for sitting there for three turns.
Okay, that makes sense.
You know, so the longer you sit him there, the longer you go without him being able to use them somewhere else, the more he's going to be able to get you in the end. But maybe, you know, you have to decide, am I willing to commit him to that spot for this long? Knowing that I'm going to get a big payout later when he might be able to do it, be doing more work for me before that.
Right. That makes total sense.
Yeah, and I know that's kind of super fuzzy because I don't have all these details worked out with, but these are the kinds of concepts that I want to have in there. So it's not just put a guy in a location and get that thing. I want there to be a lot of different ways to approach that placement, a lot of different types. A lot of options, a lot of different types of work or ways to do work for those workers.
I think that works as long as each option is simple enough that it's not too confusing.
Yeah, and you're right. That's a challenge. So that's something that I have to figure out still, right? To make sure that the different ways of using those workers in the different locations, make sure that's communicated clearly and easily.
Right.
Yeah, don't want to make it too complex.
You can probably do that with iconography, right?
Yeah. So. Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. So the kind of the next thing then is that you're creating these complex molecules at the laboratory, and then by turning in those complex molecules, and I think those would actually be tokens that you pick up, or maybe small cards or something to signify, hey, I've created this molecule, now I have it in my reserve. And then I think for scoring, I don't want those to just be straight up, this molecule's worth this many victory points and the other one's worth that many. That's too easy. I like that Stone Age model where you have to trade in a certain number of resources to get this card. And you know, and this card has this type of artifact on it, and this card has this other type, and if you get three of a kind, then you get a scoring bonus, or if you get a complete set of five, you get this other scoring bonus. I want to do something similar to that.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. But I'm not sure exactly how to approach that yet.
Yeah, I'm not... Because, I mean, the whole goal is you're mining the gas. You're not building things, right?
Right, right. You're just trying to get this stuff and sell it. And I mean, that's kind of the idea. I want this to be the point where you go to the... Not to the black market to get cards, but you use these complex molecules to go to the open market... and sell the refined and converted molecules for real rewards. And maybe you're trying to build a ship so you can move on to the next gas giant or something. Maybe that's the way to do it. You want to get...
Oh, that makes sense. Like, that'd be kind of a cool theme story too, right? That
yeah.
The ship only has enough... Like, it's like a colony of ships that move, and you only have enough energy to get, you know, enough... ship parts and stuff to get you to the next to get you to that place,
mm-hmm.
and then everyone works together, and the first person to be able to get to that next place is going to have a huge advantage, so therefore they're the winner.
Yeah, so you want to be the first one to get out there, move on to the next spot. Yeah, maybe that's the best way to approach it. And maybe
in fact, yeah. So if the board was variable, or the layout was variable, you know, to where you could have different things, you could actually have like, say, 10 different next targets, right, for the end of the game.
Oh, yeah.
And each one has a different effect. Beginning of the game, you shuffle, put three options out there. So those are the three closest systems. And you, as the winner, get to choose. So you might not win, right? Like, at the fight, when you trigger the end game of, like, I got the stuff, I'm going to go. And then you could do scoring based on that.
Yeah.
So that adds some sort of modifier. So that could give kind of a come-from-behind mechanic. If I'm going to quick patch this stuff together so I can go, you know.
Yeah.
Just the thought.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
changes it a little bit, but
Cool. Yeah, but no, I mean that it's a thematic hook, which is good. Yeah, so it's kind of early stages, you know. It's a basic structure, it's a thematic concept, and I'm starting to kind of connect the mechanics with the theme, or I'm letting the theme drive mechanical decisions. I think now that I've got a direction for scoring and end game, I can start fleshing it out into more concrete information. And it's I think I'm gonna try and see this through cool. to a prototype. It's something that I've been kind of excited about over the last week. Yeah. So hopefully I can get this somewhere. Certainly not before Origins, but maybe in the time between Origins and Gen Con I can explore a little bit more.
That'd be great.
Yeah. So that's the game. Again, gas mining, that's a terrible name, so I don't know what it would end up being called.
Could just be called Gas Giants.
Yeah, maybe that's the simplest.
It's calling a spade, right? You're going to Gas Giants.
Yeah. Hey, well, you want to be the giant in the gas mining industry.
Yeah, see? Double entendre. Even better.
Yeah. There you go. So, anyway, there's my pitch. Gas Giants. I like that. That's a good name. We'll go with that. Working title.
Cool. All right. Glad I could provide some assistance. Okay, so we do have a couple questions.
Okay.
You have one from VC. Do you want to go with that, with VC?
Yeah. Let me pull it up here.
Well, here, while you're pulling it up, then I'll read mine.
Okay.
Ray Miller sent us an email, and he said, first it says, medium-time listener, first-time caller. I think it's awesome.
Yeah.
I found you guys' podcast and your backlog a few months ago, and I've been gobbling them up like a fat and chocolate cake ever since. I am with a game group in the New England neck of the woods. That each year have a 10-day game vacation in September dubbed Bungalow North. That sounds awesome. Where everyone rents a place, shares in the expenses, grabs all their games, then invite all their other gamer friends to come. Play and stay as well. Not everyone says it stays the whole time. Some pop in for a day or two, but most stay for at least a few days so they can play games galore into the wee hours of the morning. So when I saw this on my Facebook feed... Oh, sorry, yeah. So then he linked to a meme that he found, and it's called Cowboy Architects. And it's a meme picture of two cowboys at, like, a High Noon-style shootout. It does not matter. What matters is the text, which says, I believe that a lot of conflict in the Wild West could have been avoided if cowboy architects had just made their towns big enough for everyone. This is clever.
That's funny.
And so he said after that, so when I saw this on my Facebook feed this morning, it made me think of Rob's game. I had backed Saloon Tycoon, was on Kickstarter, and looking forward to getting my copy so I can introduce all of my friends to Saloon Tycoon. Thanks for the awesome podcast and keeping the creative juices flowing.
I think, what was his name?
Ray Miller.
Ray Miller. Thanks, Ray.
Yeah.
Awesome.
I will actually forward this one to you.
Yeah. Thanks.
If you want to respond.
Yeah. Thanks for backing, man.
It's pretty awesome.
And we had a tweet from VC Young. He actually had suggested a topic for tonight, but we had already decided on the other one. So he said, how about board games turned into tabletop games or vice versa? Are you for, against, and why? And he further describes that he means like D&D becoming a board game or okay. Saloon Tycoon the RPG.
I was like, dude, well,
yeah.
Board games and tabletop.
So...
not every tabletop game is a board game, but sure. Every board game, in theory, is not always, but you know.
So, on the subject of D&D, I think when they take the setting of Dungeons and Dragons, or any of the many settings of Dungeons and Dragons, mm-hmm. that is an excellent opportunity for board games. And yes. I think Lords of Waterdeep is yep. an incredible example of that. Lords of Waterdeep is a freaking excellent game. And I don't know what the development process of that was like, but having that the Dungeons and Dragons setting, that theme to flesh that out really yep. really helps make that game special.
Yep.
But when they just try and translate a game of D&D into, you know, in dungeon crawling and that kind of stuff, and when they just try and directly translate that into a simple board game like they did with that Ravenloft game. I think that's terrible.
Yeah, I'm not as big of a fan of that either. I think that if you're going to do that, don't use the D&D theme because people have expectations. Just make your own thing.
Exactly. Right? Exactly.
Because honestly, you as an independent game designer doing it yourself probably going to do it better than Dungeons & Dragons are, because again, they have so many preconceived notions, right? That when they're like, we need all these things, let's translate it down. You know, it's an over-simulation.
Exactly.
A good simulation grabs two or three key points and sticks with those two or three key points and doesn't worry about all the minutia.
Right. So. Right. In terms of, and I think the same recommendations would apply no matter which way you're going, you know? So if we were taking Saloon Tycoon and turning it into an RPG, then you wouldn't be rolling dice to see how good a structure you would be building. You wouldn't be trying to combine certain characters along with certain, you wouldn't be trying to do those combos. You would be focusing on the thematic hooks. You would not be trying to build the theater to get Pretty Nelly in there. You would be interacting in this RPG with Pretty Nelly and making, you know, persuasion checks or whatever to make her, help her fall in love with Phineas Pillbottom, you know?
Right. Exactly. Yes. You would focus on the characters, and then the setting would be this city that maybe changes over time. Maybe each turn, you know, each few rounds in the game, when if certain events happen, it allows you to make the city bigger, which just gives you a different playing field to use with those things, right?
Right.
Maybe different rooms could have, you know, could lend themselves to different conversations, right? Like, if you're borrowing money, maybe being at the bar would be helpful, right? Or that sort of thing, you know?
Right. Yeah, so it's important, I think, for publishers, designers, to think about not just the mechanical, emulating the mechanical function, but the more important thing is to think about what works for that style of game and what feeling can be carried over from one to the other.
Right.
Yeah.
So, cool. I think that does it for questions.
Okay.
I do want to make sure we talk about our contest for a minute. Contest is over. We have actually gotten quite a few entries. I'm pretty happy with this.
Great.
I think this is honestly the most entries we've ever gotten for a contest.
Well, it's a pretty good prize.
So, yeah, it is. Well, what's awesome is that tells us how good the prize is. Right?
Yeah.
So, again, what we're going to be doing is I'm going to forward these all to someone, and that person is going to strip out all of the things that tell us the people's names, because honestly, a lot of the names are pretty close for the game. Most of them just say football dice game, so it's great. So I'll never remember who did whatever. So she's going to do that for us, just forward it over, and then we will go through and pick. And yeah, so we'll pick a winner, we'll announce it. And I think... I don't know, Rob, let's see how you feel about this. I think that we should announce the winner, and then live on the show, I'll pull up the original emails and we'll figure out who the heck it actually was.
Sure, we can do that.
Okay, awesome. I like that idea.
Yeah, and we'll probably announce that after Origins, I think.
Yes. Yeah. Because we're going to need some time. We want to give them some good reviews, read the rules, think about them a lot, and make sure, you know, we know what we're doing. So, so we'll do that.
Yeah, give us a couple more weeks.
Yep, just a few more weeks. Thank you for the patience. And when we announce it, we'll just ask that you get back to us so that you can tell us if you are coming to Gen Con, so that we know if we need to pick someone else to be the judge or if it will be you. So.
Yep.
Cool. I think that's all we have for tonight.
Okie doke. Well, thank you everybody for listening, and thank you for being patient during this episode with weird audio. Well, we'll figure it out.
Next week, we should be good to go.
Should be back on track, yeah. So thank you for listening. If you want to get in touch with us, you can send us email to buildingthegamepodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter at podcastbtg. Jason is at J.A. Slingerland. I am at poorly_designed. Like us on Facebook. Give us a 5-star review on all the podcast places. Call our Google Voice number at 770-TEL-BTG. We'll see you at Origins, if you're coming into Origins. If not, we'll just talk to you guys again next week. So thank you once again. We appreciate it. Later. Good night, sirs and madams.
Good night.
Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios. All of the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are property of the Building the Game podcast. Next time on Building the Game.
So the best news is at some point my computer's going to go, dun.
Yeah.
Even though I turned down the volume, so.
Yeah, we'll see what happens with mine. I'm still terrified every day that it will just decide to install Windows 10 without asking me. Because every time I sit down and look at it, it's got a thing popping up saying, hey, don't you want Windows 10? You know you want it. Just trust us, man.
Right.